Good morning. This is Bob Camp from Ren and Stimpy, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning. Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for September 14th, 2021. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflo.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Chip, what's the weather like where you're at?
It is beautiful.
That's good.
It is absolutely beautiful. In fact, it's in the 70s. I don't think you could ask for better nights. So we went from like really hot to like perfect hot.
We're right in that in-between, aren't we? Between summer and fall. It's the last gasp of summer here. It is hot in the Chicagoland area.
Absolutely. And I don't think, I was just discussing this, I don't think we can use the term Indian summer anymore.
Do we have to go with, like, Pakistani?
No, I think we have to just go with a different term. I don't know, you know, that's a term, like that warm time in fall.
Okay.
We'll have to find a different word for that. It sounds like we're going to be playing around.
Playing around with language. That is my third album, Playing Around with Language.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You and I both got a chance to see Reminiscence, which is on HBO Max and in theaters. Chip, did you go to the movie theater to watch Reminiscence?
I absolutely did not.
Aren't you glad?
I am very glad I didn't go to the movie theater to see this movie. I'll go ahead and say it right now. I thought the dialogue was really awkward. I thought the actors were not really well suited for this. They picked the wrong actors for this. And while it has a very interesting premise, you know, I don't think this movie really fired the way it should be. I'm going to go ahead and say it right now, 40 out of 100.
Yeah, I am going to very deeply agree with you on this one. This is a Hugh Jackman-run production in that they hired Hugh Jackman, and he really seems to be phoning it in on this character. I was not thrilled with Hugh Jackman's performance, and you're right. All of the other actors didn't give me what I needed from this story. The story, it has potential. This is the story of an investigator, and he does his investigations by using time travel, by allowing people to go back into their memories and to remember what happened. That's the reminiscence. And that is an intriguing story that we've read before that could go somewhere great. This film does not go to anywhere wonderful. And the film noir piece, that investigative piece, like Humphrey Bogart movie with Hugh Jackman, I would watch that movie. I tried to watch that movie. This is not it.
Yeah, I didn't feel the love language between the two love interests.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, why Hugh Jackman was so obsessed with her or anything like that. There just wasn't that spark there. And it seemed like the dialogue when two actors were communicating with each other, it just wasn't going where it needed to go. I think that there needed to be a rewrite on this. Something was missing there that should have made this much more intriguing. Ideally, if on the highest level, it would be paired with like the time traveler's wife, mm-hmm. because, you know, there's something there. But the time traveler's wife seemed to have a lot more to it than this movie could. And I have to say that I don't know if it was the directing, if the writing, or the actors. I think that there was probably a lot of just miscasting, needing rewrite and dialogue, and maybe the story needed to be fleshed out a little more.
I think that I would blame the casting more than the writing and directing. This is written and directed by Lisa Joy, who you might know as the creator and writer of the Westworld series on HBO. Mm-hmm. So she's got writing chops for sure. She can write a creepy, weird story. This story has those facets, but it's the dialogue, it's the way that the characters interact that I did not like this movie at all.
Okay, so I'm also going to bring up something that we talked to Pam Adore about. Pam talked about the need for stories to show climate change. And the background of this story is Miami. And mm-hmm. Miami that's flooded. So the waters have risen and there's a fight back. And there is a group of people who are on dry land and a group of people living in sort of the, I couldn't call it swampy area, but the city areas that have been flooded out.
The streets have an inch of water. Everywhere that they walk, they're walking through water because there's water everywhere in Miami.
Water everywhere. Not a drop to drink, Steve. This is something that I did notice. Mm-hmm. This is certainly something that Pam had pointed out the need for. So this movie does address that.
But does it address it in a strong way? Or is it just, yeah, there's another thing going on in the story that's not really part of the story? And is it important there?
Well, I don't think it's important, but it is something, like I said, Pam, you and I discussed this as the need to kind of show progression is, you know, a future and with waters rising and stuff like that, and where it just needs to be part of the story. It's not the main thrust of the story. It wasn't really needed.
Right.
But when they created the environment for the story to take place, this is where it is.
And I think that's one of the things where the writing does work is this imagery of water, because the whole science of this science fiction, the tank that they are put into to go back in time is water. And there's a whole, you know, there's so many feelings around water in the writing. The writing is not bad. It's the casting and the acting.
I disagree. I think the writing is bad. I think the dialogues are just so stiff and poor, and it just didn't move the story along. Like I said, you've never felt the love language in there. And then when the two characters, you know, I'm not talking about the love interest, but two characters are connecting to each other and they're supposed to be working off each other. Mm-hmm. The dialogue's not working. There's something that's missing. It's not just their delivery. Hmm. If you go back to Harrison Ford talking to George Lucas and he said, you know, you can write this crap, but you know, you can't speak it.
Right.
That is, and he was talking about Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
This was the similar. There was something that was missing in how the dialogue was working with each other. You could just see them kind of like reading the script. Yes. As they're looking at each other. And I don't think that was just acting. I think there was something missing that they just were not connecting on.
All right. So that's our film of the week, ladies and gentlemen, Reminiscence. You can go to HBO Max and find that one, or you can go to the movie theater and pay for it and be very frustrated.
Steve, you got to see something else on HBO Max. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I've been watching the TV show. There's a thing called TV, Chip. There's TV shows.
Never heard of it.
This one is called Hacks, and it is a generational sort of story. Gene Smart plays an older comedian who is, you know, world famous, working every night in Las Vegas, and she runs into the hotel owner who doesn't really feel like she needs to be on stage every night anymore. That her stuff is old, that she's washed up, and he hires a younger millennial generation writer to help her out with her comedy. This millennial is a very stereotypical millennial that we think of. She's lazy. She's not getting out of bed. She's not doing what she needs to do. She talks about her personal life in ways that the older comedian doesn't like very much, even though the older comedian certainly has had a similar lifestyle in her life. She doesn't like talking about it the way the millennial does. This is one of those stories that we're going to see a lot of going forward. The older actors and the younger up-and-coming people working together and finding a way to work together and find the joy in life, find the comedy. This is not bad television, but I can see why it's on HBO Max, why this is one of those shows that is out there. Gene Smart top of her game still. She is doing wonderful work. And the young and up-and-comer, she might be something that we can look forward to seeing in the future, but she's played in such a negative way. I didn't love the show Hacks either.
Well, that sounds too bad, because it does seem like comedy is a great place to have generations communicate with each other, mm-hmm. to talk a little bit about the different values. Every generation has their group of it. If you think of, in the 1970s, the Bad News Bears with mm-hmm. Walter Matthau as this, drinking beer, drinking beer and driving with children, Steve, in a convertible. No problems there. No problems okay. there.
Now I want to watch that movie on my list of my movies that I love. I love The Bad News Bears. That is a great story. So well put together. And you're right. Working together with the next generation and finding those magical ways to get done what they need to get done. Bad News Bears is a great example. Good job, Chip.
Steve, take us back to 1985. What did you watch?
Yep. 1985 again, Chip. My favorite year. I watched the movie House this week, something that I have not watched in a long time, but is in my memory as one of those movies that is very influential. House features William Catt, Richard Mull, and George Wendt. This is like the sitcom people making a movie. This one, I knew that it was influential. I knew that it changed my life when I watched this movie in 1985. I didn't realize that it's that first foray into comedy horror, that genre that I actually love. I don't like horror. I do not like horror movies. I don't understand the genre, but funny, slapstick, silly horror is a genre that I love. This is that movie writ large.
Was it worth revisiting?
Yes. This one holds up really well. It's very 1980s. The clothes and the cars and the situations are very 1980s. What I didn't realize about this one, watching it again as an adult, is it is actually a metaphor for PTSD. The main character, played by William Catt, the greatest American hero, the William Catt character is actually a Vietnam vet. And what we're seeing through the lens of his mental state is actually a psychotic break that's happening as a result of PTSD. This is a lot deeper than I knew it was in 1985.
Well, you were a kid then, and now you're looking through all these this mature eyes, Steve. Mm-hmm. Steve, speaking of mature eyes, tell us a little bit about Weird Al.
That's the best transition you've had in 8 years. Yes, Chip. I watched one of my favorite movies of all time. That's Weird Al's UHF from 1989 this week. This movie is so fun. I can't resist watching this movie every year and doing all the dialogue. There's so many jokes in this that have entered my daily speaking habits. I do say badgers. We don't need no stinking badgers. And this time, when that line came up in UHF and I was watching it in the family room and most of the family was sitting around, the 15-year-old was sitting there for that 4 minutes and went, oh, that's where that comes from. That's how often I say that line.
Well, that came from badgers. We don't need no stinking badgers.
Right. The treasure of Sierra Madre, Humphrey Bogart. I understand that it's a pun, a parody of that old Humphrey Bogart movie. But no, I say badgers.
Well, Steve, you know, being a father, it's all about finding those bad jokes that you can tell over and over again. Eventually, maybe your young people can determine where those bad jokes came from.
And eventually, maybe they'll look back and go, oh, Dad was kind of funny. No, maybe not.
Well, they'll become fathers one day, Steve, and they can find their own jokes.
Right.
There's no crying in baseball.
We got some movies opening this week, Chip. Some things that maybe you'll go to the movie theater and see. Maybe not.
So something opened yesterday on Monday, September 13th, was Why the Last Man. And Why the Last Man was a comic book series. But it was basically around a world where an astronaut and his monkey came back, Steve. They're the only males living.
BJ and the Bear? Is this a trucker and his monkey crossing the country? You sold me. Don't tell me anymore. I'm sold.
Well, it was a series by Brian K. Vaughan and Pia Guerra. And this was released on Vertigo, which was a DC Comics imprint from 2002 to 2008. This was a celebrated story at the time. And the series was, why did all the males pass away? What does a female world look like being run? Bunch of Amazons is what it kind of turns out to be. And then sort of kind of solving that mystery. So I have high hopes for this. I hope it does well. It's playing on FX, which is, Steve, a television channel.
It's cable. That's cable television. So I will probably never see this. I'll probably have to purchase rights to watch it at some point if it's any good.
Well, it's also streaming through Hulu. So so it could be through FX, the channel through Hulu. So here we go. Let's figure it out.
Steve, figure out how to watch stuff in 2021. That's for sure.
Steve, if you were a grumpy old man, what movie would you go to see this week?
How is that an if? Now that you are a grumpy old man, you might go to the movie theater this week and see Cry Macho. This is the latest by director and actor Clint Eastwood.
This looks great, by the way. He's got to go to Mexico. He's got to bring somebody back. And all he's going to do is just groan the whole time. I mean,
go to Mexico.
I love all of his movies. I love his movies from the old. I love his movies now. And he just plays, he's a character of himself in so many fun ways.
This is just Clint Eastwood playing Clint Eastwood and being put into a situation. I agree with that completely. But that works. It works so well.
One-time rodeo star, washed-up horse breeder, takes a job to bring a young man's son home. Steve... That is a premise right there. I don't know whatever his age is. He's going to use his smarts to outsmart the young whippersnappers.
You young people don't understand. I'm not Nick Nolte.
Exactly. So, Steve, Nicolas Cage comes out with his famous movie this week. What is that?
Oh, boy. Nicolas Cage, his career is just... been just down the tubes the last 10 years. And the tubes continue this week with The Prisoners of the Ghostland. A notorious criminal must break an evil curse in order to rescue an abducted girl who has mysteriously disappeared. I'm Nicolas Cage.
Well, maybe there's Nick a Nolte. Comedy that could save us, Steve.
That's not a comedy. That one's serious. He's really breaking an evil curse. But maybe the Lady of the Manor can help us, Chip.
Now, the trailer looks promising. Does but it also looks like that we may have received every joke. The premise is an aimless woman who is kind of down or out and certainly... not doing herself any favor, is haunted by a ghost in a manor who's going to teach her, you know, all the ways of the world, Steve.
This is one of those B movies that I would probably enjoy, but I think you're right. I think the trailer gives away every funny moment of this movie. This is directed by Christian Long and his brother Justin Long, and written by that pair of brothers as well. It features Judy Greer as the ghost and Melanie Lynskey as the down-and-out woman. It's got an all-star cast. Ryan Phillippe is in there, Luis Guzman, Patrick Duffy. They found Patrick Duffy and put him in a movie.
Well, he's from Atlanta, Steve.
So he was easy to find.
That's right. I think he was from Atlanta, you know, by way of Dallas. I'm just throwing that out.
He's from Dallas.
All right, Steve. Is there any movies that we could learn maybe a Cockney accent?
Michael Caine is featured in the movie Best Sellers. He's a cranky retired author who reluctantly embarks on the final book tour to help out a young publisher. That's another one of those young and old getting together, working it out, and finding a way to make it happen.
It certainly looks like Grumpy Old Man 3, Steve, on some level.
Right, because the young person in this one is Aubrey Plaza, so we've got some star power there in this generational story.
All right, Steve, is there a movie that stars Peter Parker?
Andrew Garfield is featured in this week's movie, The Eyes of Tammy Faye. This is a dramatization of the story of Tammy Faye Baker and her husband Jim Baker and their rise to power in the evangelical scene.
And I think this is going to be featuring a lot of Maybelline. I don't know why.
Right. Tammy Faye, very famous for her eye makeup, for sure. That's if you know nothing of Tammy Faye, you know that.
She cries in lots of mascara, Steve. Lots and lots of mascara. This actually looks pretty good. In fact, this is the movie I'm going to suggest we see this week. If not, Cry Macho. Both of those look like a lot of fun.
Very different films, for sure.
Book it. Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. Let me tell you, here's a long story, Chip. The long story is this. We read Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir a few weeks ago with Pam Bedour and went through that book, and it was a wonderful, wonderful adventure. Then I realized that I really enjoyed that adventure because of the reader of the audiobook. And I did a little investigating and found out his name is Ray Porter, and he's one of my favorite audiobook readers. So I did a search for Ray Porter narrated books, and I came across And Then She Vanished. This was published in February 2021, written by Nick Jones, a British author, and it's narrated by Ray Porter. And I said, yes, I would like to listen to Ray Porter tell me a story. I didn't know anything about this story when I downloaded it, Chip. I found out it's a time travel book.
There's a bonus for you right
Surprise!
There.
Surprise!
There's something that Steve likes. I think it's called time travel. So tell us a little bit about this book.
This is another one of those stories of obsession. The main character has this memory of being a young boy, being in charge of his little sister, and at the age of 7, she disappears while under his watch. He is watching her at the local fair, and then he gets distracted for a second, and she literally disappears. They look for her for weeks. They bring out all of the people from the neighborhood to search for this little girl. She's lost and she's never found. This obsession with this feeling that he is responsible for her disappearance turns into an adventure where he finds a way to travel back in time to find her, to save her.
Interesting. And so how do you travel back in time, Steve?
Well, this is where the science of this story breaks down a little bit, because it's magical, where he simply has the power to go back in time. He meets with a hypnotherapist, and the hypnotherapist shows him how to regress in his mind, and when he regresses in his mind, he discovers the power to actually go back in time, really, and to make changes to the timeline. This is the kind of time travel that frustrates me, because it's too much magic, not enough science, and it's the kind of time travel that he creates quite a few paradoxes in this writing. Nick Jones is a British author. This is a British story with a British family, and interestingly, Ray Porter, who's an American, does not do a British accent for the main character of this story, and he chooses to use British accents for all of the ancillary characters, just not the main character.
Well, that, if he wanted to learn a little bit about how to do a proper British accent, I heard Dick Van Dyke has a class where he can teach people.
Dick Dick Van Dyke Cockney chimney sweep accent is universal. That's what the British people sound like.
You know, and they don't take offense to it at all, Steve.
This book, this is a series.
Julie Andrews did him no favors, Steve. Did him no favors. She said, we're just going to go with it.
Just go with it. It's fine.
Mary Poppins, don't. We're fine with this. Go with this. Dick, you got it.
Yeah, come back for the sequel. It'll be fine. You can dance on the desk.
Exactly.
This book is a series. I'm not sure that I'm going to pick up volume 2 of the Joseph Bridgman series. I'm intrigued by the character's ability to jump back in time. He has a secondary ability that he can hear the history of objects. So the author makes him into a antiques dealer, which makes sense. I get that. I see the beauty of an antiques dealer knowing the history of an object, seeing what was occurring around that object, and feeling the emotion of that scene. That's a beautiful story. Adding the time travel aspect to it, though, breaks some of the rules of time travel as they are established, and those paradoxes really come back to bite the main character in this story in ways that are very unsatisfying for me, the reader.
Look at that. Uwe and a snob when it comes to time travel. There he goes, Steve.
Certain that I, as much as I love the time travel genre, I need the story to follow the rules of time travel. If you break those rules, I'm very frustrated by this. Absolutely.
All right. So, Steve, you said you're not really interested in picking up the second part to this. Would you recommend this for people who have interest in time travel or these types of stories?
Yes. I think most people are not as snobbish as I am when it comes to time travel, and the emotion of trying to find your little sister who disappeared, and the again, PTSD of being affected by this moment in time and having your family ripped apart by this 7-year-old girl disappearing, certainly are in the story. I do recommend And Then She Vanished by Nick Jones.
And you could pair this with a Pinot Grigio and a nice brie cheese, Steve. There you go. There's your snobbery for the day.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. There's so much news this week, Chip. Let's talk about almost none of it.
Steve, I heard there's some glasses that can make you look smart.
That's the headline, Chip. Facebook has some glasses, and the Facebook glasses are available. They're made by Ray-Ban, and they look just like a regular pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses, but they have a tiny little camera and an even tinier little light to indicate that you are recording everything in your life.
When you put them on, Bob Seger starts singing, and then you're like Tom Cruise dancing around the house, Dave.
Yes, the Tom Cruise from Minority Report, though, because the creepy factor of having a camera on your face is back, and this time it's brought to you by Facebook.
Some of the reviews said that they really, except for the light in the corner, they were light, and you could see where the technology is going, and if we've learned anything from watching all those cams in people's cars where asteroids come down or accidents happen, this may become more common to record activities.
We've been saying that for so long, though, Chip. I mean, the Google Glass, when executive producer JD had his Google Glass and we got our photo at Chicago TARDIS with his Google Glass immortalizing this idea of wearing a camera on your face for good reason, to have those experiences recorded so that you can review them later. There's great reasons for these glasses. They're still creepy. I still don't want, for instance, my students in class to be recording every moment of their day for review later.
Well, and you're correct. There's something that is not natural about it. And the idea of having cameras on every corner certainly seems like an invasion of privacy. the idea of someone recording general population or your conversation or something of that nature also seems to be, without your consent, seems to be something that, that could be a violation too. We really are going to have to kind of address these type of things in the future, and maybe how, what is the mores of it, and then what legally, how this can be used. Certainly you can incriminate yourself not meaning to. Anyway, Steve, Apple seems to have made headlines last week. It seems the App Store is being challenged a little bit.
Once again, Apple finds itself in court, being as big a target as they are. There's a lot of money that happens in the Apple App Store, and the courts have ruled upon whether or not Apple can continue to demand 30% of any money that goes through any app that was from the App Store. The ruling says that Apple must loosen its restrictions on how developers can seek payment within their apps, that they can't take that 30% from all transactions.
Now, we already have precedent for this. And the way it kind of works is if you set up like a Netflix account online, you have a username and password, you're paying Netflix directly. You're not paying through the Apple TV. You're not paying through the App Store, something like that. And so when you get to your Apple device, you just basically log in with your username and password. And so there may be some elegance to using an App Store, but you know, there could be some savings or there could be a benefit to actually going directly to the company. Maybe they can offer it at less money or more features or something else by going directly to them.
Right. And this part of this started with the game Fortnite, because Epic Games did not want to give 30% of their profits for every transaction back to Apple. So they pulled out of the App Store so that anyone wanting to download that game had to go straight through Fortnite. The judge's ruling this time says that it's okay for a developer to lead a user out of the app to do the transaction to avoid the 30%.
Amazon's done that for years, working through iPhones too. So it's not unprecedented. All right, Steve, there's a couple people who have made the news last week. Let's talk a little bit about them.
Yeah, one of our favorites, John Mulaney, made headlines this week when he was on the Seth Meyers Late Night Show and explained his current situation.
He, in his comedy bits,
Chicago's very own John Mulaney. You're right.
He's talked a lot about his substance abuse. He talked about going through college and his use of drugs, and he's pretty open with that. He had an intervention, and Seth Meyers was part of that intervention, along with a group of his friends. And so John Mulaney has gone through rehab multiple times over the last year or so after that intervention. So it sounds like that he has struggled with substance abuse, as many people do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as many people do, you ebb and flow through that period of time. But you could definitely, when I watched the interview, one, you can't help but cheer for John Mulaney. He's a very talented, funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Seth Meyers, you could tell, was genuinely interested in his friend's health.
Yeah.
And so, along with a group of people creating this environment, basically talking a little bit about it, John said, as soon as I walked in, he goes, "Oh, I get it. It's an intervention. I totally get it. But the whole time, you know, one of the other things that John said was, "I'm in a room full of comedians and nobody is cracking jokes except for me." He goes, "It certainly was something that was very difficult to handle." It seems like, you know, based on his drug abuse and sort of some situations that happened around it, he experienced a divorce, but he has since gone through rehab. Mm-hmm. He has a girlfriend. It looks like they're expecting a child. There seems to be some positive things that are happening here. The reason why this is important is, one, I find John Mulaney incredibly funny, mm-hmm. and just so talented. And I, you know, the hope is he matures through mm-hmm. young person John Mulaney to older person John Mulaney. And I think that many people, they don't necessarily have to go through a substance abuse issue, but many of people at some point have this moment that I was a young person and now I'm an adult. Mm-hmm. And so my hope is that John Mulaney is an adult right now.
And certainly parenthood might be that moment. It was for many of us that childhood and that adulthood, that line between when you're a father, you have to act at least a little bit differently. And hopefully he has gotten his demons exercised and he knows where he's headed. I'm pulling for John Mulaney for sure.
Steve, it's only been 20 years since I became a father. I hope one day I mature. So, I mean, that's one of my hopes.
Don't look at all of my toys in the basement, and don't look at the fact that I watched UHF as my movie of the week this week.
Steve, there were tears that were shed this week when a certain young man showed up with a video.
Yeah, not everybody's named Steve, but those people who are named Steve are very important, especially in the nostalgia department. Steve Burns from Blue's Clues gave a message to his followers and his viewers this week.
You can watch it through our show notes. It certainly is a touching message for any child. My children grew up watching Blue's Clues. There was a pacing to the show. It certainly was much slower than most of us were used to. And it was refined even more through Dora the Explorer.
Designed for that childhood, that mind, that mission that I really think started with Mr. Rogers. Finding that right pace, talking to children, not being anything but a children's program. Blue's Clues had that in spades.
Well, I think you just hit it right there. So if we talk about our generation's youth programs from Sesame Street, The Electric Company, something like Mr. Rogers, they were attempting to generate children-appropriate television. Romper Room, Bozo the Clown, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. What they didn't have is necessarily the science behind them. They were doing the best they could with what the latest was at that time. But where this moved to a whole different level, they recognized the right type of pacing. They recognized the colors they must use. They recognizing the phrasing and sort of the structure of the program. And it got really, really dialed in. I remember reading a book that talked a lot about it. And they were using the scale and where Sesame Street may have been a 50 out of 100 on a scale of connecting to the child, because it's certainly a very sporadic, commercially type of a program,
right?
Without commercials. Mr. Rogers may have been a 70 out of 100. I'm going from memory. They're fuzzy. Just go with me. Blue's Clues was like a 95, and Dora was a perfect 100. Hmm. So there was this ability to connect, to give the child the right pacing, the right colors, the right support. There was something really right there. And Steve was the host of that. Steve mm-hmm. was the person asking the questions. And he was the person connecting to children. They could not have picked a better actor mm-hmm. for him. And the way it kind of ended for Steve was he was getting older and he wanted to become an actor. He had other things that he wanted to do. So they had to create a strategy on moving him out of the program and how to bring in a new host. Mm-hmm. This is the 25th anniversary, and Steve addresses that one day he's there, and the next day he was leaving for college, and here's this new guy taking over. And the new guy did a good job, too. So we were watching, and I had really young children at the time, right at the time the transition took place. But they're well aware of Steve, and as my children said, aw, when they got to see it.
this message this week was pitch perfect. This actor who wanted to move on to other things, and I understand that desire to want to move on to other things. He came back 25 years later, and he delivered this message to the people who are now adults, who still have that nostalgia, still have that emotion for this character, and he delivered perfect emotion, telling them that he still cares about them, that he never forgot them. That was a beautiful, well put together piece.
And he also showed up on Stephen Colbert's show, Steve, just for knowledge. And you know, we all can understand what the challenge of being pigeonholed is. I mean, who wants to be pigeonholed as host of Too Much Scrolling, Steve?
8 years in, I don't know anybody that wants to do this for the next 25 years. Oh, wait, I do. I will be pigeonholed into this podcast as long as you're willing to do all of this fun with me, Chip. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Yes, and I never forgot you. I'm sorry that I had to go. But I never forgot you. That's the worst acting. That is not the best Steve acting. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future.